If you've experienced a DNA surprise, you know that your emotions can range from shock to denial to grief to anger to confusion to joy and around again. And sometimes it's hard to find people who understand this unique experience. Sometimes we feel a little stuck as we navigate this journey. That's why we created the DNA Surprise Retreat. At the DNA Surprise Retreat, you'll enjoy 6 expert-led sessions to help you process your DNA surprise. You'll eat delicious catered meals, and most importantly, you'll build beautiful friendships with people who understand you, all in a stunning private ranch facility in the Arizona desert. If you've had shocking DNA test results, know that you're not alone. This retreat is for you. Join us September 19th through the 22nd, 2024 in Phoenix, Arizona. Registration is open now. Reserve your space at dnasurpriseretreat.com. I'll see you there.
I think a lot of people go into, you know, once they find family through DNA testing, I think there is a tendency just to kind of jump into things. And I feel like, well, I definitely kind of jumped into things. But at the same time, you just have to go with what you want and not think of other people's.
Imagine spitting into a tube, sending off your DNA, and unknowingly turning your life upside down. For me and thousands of others, this is our reality. I'm your host, Alexis Auerselt. In July of 2021, I discovered that I am an NPE, someone who has experienced a non-paternal event. In other words, my biological father isn't who I thought he was. This podcast shares the journeys of people who were shocked by a DNA discovery, mostly through modern DNA testing. We're telling the stories of NPEs, adoptees, and donor-conceived people and their families. This is DNA Surprises. What's in a name? For people who have experienced a DNA surprise, a whole lot. In this week's episode, Morgan shares his DNA surprise story as the child of an adoptee. He describes how he first found his biological grandmother before the days of the internet, and later found his biological grandfather's family with the help of commercial DNA testing. He also explains why changing his name to that of his well-known paternal side made sense to him, even though it led to estrangement with his raised family. Thank you for sharing your story, Morgan.
So I'm Morgan, I'm 51, and I currently live in Washington, D.C. Well, my DNA surprise story, it actually is a story in two parts. It started in my teen years. I would say by the time I was, 14 or 15, I developed a real interest in genealogy. I was also a history buff. At that point, I was living with my parents and my twin brother in the Midwest. So my father was adopted as an infant. His mother had been a nurse during World War II in the Pacific Theater, and ended up having an affair with it. Back then, all we knew that it was an officer in the Army. And so my father was the product of that relationship. She had to obviously leave the Army and put my father up for adoption. My father was adopted by two older individuals. It was quite surprising, I thought, that a 56 and a 43-year-old couple were able to adopt a child at that time. But they were fairly well-to-do. And so they were also very open about the fact that he had been adopted. In my teen years, I became very interested in genealogy. And so I had worked extensively on my mother's side of the family. My father's family, it was always the big question. And I would get little clues and hints here and there from my adoptive grandmother about my father's early life. But, obviously in the pre-internet era, you were very limited to how you approached genealogical research. A lot of it was snail mail, contacting, you know, a county courthouse or a library. I mean, you were really at the mercy of people hundreds of miles away. So I did not make really, I didn't gain any traction on his particular story. He knew that I was interested in it. My grandmother knew. It wasn't a taboo subject at all.
Were they supportive of you searching?
They were supportive, actually. My grandmother ended up dying when I was in high school or passing away. So she was kind of out of the picture. But a few years prior to that, I'd come across my father's birth certificate, which had listed the adoptive parents, but it also had the delivering physician. And since it was a small town in Arizona, it was very easy for me to find out, to locate this individual who had sadly passed away, but his wife was still alive. So in 1986, I sent a letter to the doctor's wife, and I said, you know, this is who I am. This is what I'm looking for. And if you have any information you can pass along to me, I would be very grateful. And I did not hear anything for a number of years until I was just about ready to graduate from college in 1994. The doctor's wife was quite old, and she ended up passing away shortly thereafter, contacted my mother, and just on a whim. And she had been sitting on my letter for, what, eight years by that time. And, you know, she kind of knew that her time was kind of coming to an end, and she wanted to pass along this information because evidently my letter had affected her. So my mother called and said, well, we have a name. We have two names, in fact, one of which was my biological grandmother, and then the other one was presumably the father. It turned out my grandmother had given the name of a friend rather than the actual name of my biological grandfather. So that kind of set things into motion, and I had my biological grandmother's name in her birthplace. And at that point, I don't know how I found this information, but I was able to track down a local historian in the county where she had lived in North Carolina, or where she was born. And I called, just cold called. And the woman at the historian said, well, you're in luck, because this happens to be, you know, a well-established family in the area. And I'm going to put you in contact with a cousin of yours she was actually the family genealogist. And I contacted her, and she said, well, your father has a sister who's been looking for him, and I've been trying to help her with her search. So within a matter of weeks, the whole thing just blew up. And it turned out that my father's biological mother was still alive. He had three sisters.
Wow.
And shortly thereafter, there was a big family reunion where my parents went out to California and met the family for the first time. Now, I was not part of this, even though I had helped facilitate it. A few months later, my grandmother decided that she wanted to have the whole family go to North Carolina and, you know, as a reveal for my father, and went out there. I met my grandmother, one of my aunts, lots of cousins. It was really an amazing experience. My biological grandmother was a great lady. You know, I felt very bad for her because, you know, she had carried this secret around for years. Being a woman at that time, it wasn't considered socially acceptable. Interestingly enough, the whole family in North Carolina had known this secret for years. So that sparked what for my father has been, you know, an amazing family connection and relationship. The three sisters he's very close to, the mother he became very close to until she died. I was not very involved with this branch of the family. You know, I just graduated from college. I was going to grad school. So a lot of things were happening at a particularly busy time in my life. But, you know, as the years went on, you know, they had a very strong relationship with these people, and I did not. All the aunts are incredibly religious. The fact that I'm gay, I think, was a real issue for them. So with the exception of the one aunt who I would categorize as the nice religious person in the group, the other two sisters really would have nothing to do with me. And in fact, you know, at this point, I developed a relationship with the one sister. Another sister I'd actually flown out to my parents' home to meet. She was there visiting. Nothing in common. It was a very uncomfortable situation. The other sister, you know, has not been very receptive. I have all these first cousins. I've never met any of them. But my father and my twin brother, to some extent, have had a relationship with these people. So, you know, throughout this period of time, while my grandmother was still alive, we tried to get the name of my father's birth father. Mm-hmm. And she refused to tell us.
Why? Did she say why?
She did not say why. And at a certain point, it got to be very contentious with my mother because she wanted to know what the health history was. And, you know, that's a concern that I think most of the people you've interviewed have said, you know, is a huge concern. And she threatened to basically have my father cut ties with them if, you know, she wouldn't give up the goods. Ultimately, she did not tell us. And my mother, I think, just cut her losses because she realized, you know, my father grew up basically with a mother. His father had died when he was five. They were from very small families. And as they were much, much older, many of the people and on, you know, their branches were no longer living. So my father never had any family other than my mother's family. And so I think my mother realized, well, this, you know, the negatives don't quite outweigh the positives. Mm-hmm. And so she let it go. And my oldest aunt was able, over the course of years, to get little tidbits of information. And so she was able to give us a last name. She gave us some, you know, minor details about his rank in the military. And that was all. So I just had a name. And, you know, this was during the 1990s, just before the internet. So options were very limited. And so I had thought about it. I had tried to figure out an angle. I had had copies of my grandmother's military records, so I was able to locate where she was in the South Pacific. But it wasn't enough to answer our big question.
I'm curious, in that time before the internet really took off, before we had DNA tests, what could you do during that time to do the research?
There's absolutely nothing. And that's why I'm so blown away by how advanced things are, how quickly and easily accessible this information is. If I had had the internet at that time, I could have, you know, blown the lid off this thing. But that wouldn't happen for another, well over, you know, 20 years by that point, or actually close to 30, I think. I would think about how to go about, you know, this search, but with no resources, no internet, I just kind of, you know, it was a lingering question, but I never really was able to act on anything up until in 2017. I will say that before that, I had gone home for a weekend, and in the room where I would stay in my parents' house, they had just purchased a gun safe. And the gun safe had the last name that ultimately turned out to be the last name, the correct one. And I would see it on subsequent visits, and I would think, wow, could I be related to these people? It crossed my mind. And then a few years later, when the DNA tests, you know, started to become quite popular, I had decided, well, I'm going to take a DNA test. But at that point, I didn't even think that I could possibly locate my father's paternal line. I had cousins who were telling me that we had Native American ancestry. And it was also a question that my partner had. And he ended up actually having Native American ancestry. I did not. I bought the test as a Christmas gift. I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to get this question answered once and for all, because I had done extensive research on my grandmother's family. There was no way we had any Native American ancestry, even though I desperately wanted to have Native American ancestry. None of the cousins would take the DNA test because they were all freaked out about the privacy issues. So we took the tests, and it took about 2 or 3 months to get the results. They both came, we both received them on the same day. We're sitting in our sunroom, and I opened it up, and I immediately, you know, I looked at the ethnicity estimate. This was 23andMe. There were a number of surprises, but there was no Native American ancestry. Mm. It turns out that I'm almost completely, my ancestry is from the British Isles, about 75%. Mm-hmm. My Jewish ancestry was a big surprise because I had always thought that I was a quarter, and it turns out I'm only 17% Ashkenazi Jewish. And then I clicked on to the DNA matches, and I looked at those. And I was looking at the list, and I had a cousin, a first cousin, who I'm very close with. She was at the top of the list, and then right below her was another relative that was listed as a first cousin once removed. And I was just absolutely shocked. And the name was so unique that I just immediately dropped everything. I said, okay, well, I'm going to do an internet search. I'm going to find out once and for all. And it also said that it was on the father, you know, it was on the father's side.
Yeah, because the tests can discern.
Within a matter of 3 hours, I knew exactly who my biological grandfather was. And it was just the most astonishing thing because I located my cousin Thanet and, you know, very unique name. It was very easy to find information on her. And then when I started investigating the family history, there was no shortage of it on the internet. And it was literally, it was the most mind-blowing thing.
Mm.
You know, to not know. And then, bam. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
And it was really shocking because it turns out that I'm from a very old, established Mormon family. And I'd always been obsessed with the LDS Church practically my whole life. There was just something about that particular religion that I had always found fascinating. Not to mention, you know, the whole story of, you know, the Mormon Church, how it developed, how they migrated to Utah. And it was just, it was really the most amazing thing. So the family were very involved in the early history of the church, and they are still quite a presence in the state of Utah. So it was just the most mind-blowing hit, you know, dump of information I could have imagined.
So you didn't even need to contact your cousin. You were able to just do all of that deep dive and learn so much without even contacting. That's amazing.
It was absolutely amazing. And, you know, I did contact the cousin on 23andMe. It took her a while to get back to me, but we've since connected. She's family. We're quite close. You know, I visited with her a number of times. She has one son and she has a brother who's still living. And it's really turned out to be just an amazing connection.
So did she know about the adoption and all of that? Or was she surprised to find you?
She was very surprised to find me. Just a little bit of backstory. So her father was quite old when she was born. And he had left the Mormon church. He had relocated to New York. He had a completely separate life from his LDS background. He was very close to his family. And, you know, so my cousin, she did know certain members of the family, but they didn't live nearby. She wasn't really interested in the family history until she had joined 23andMe. So when we hooked up, she said, well, you know, this is really great. She's like, I've got you. You're so interested. She's like, now I can actually really learn about these people, reach out, you know, get to know more people. That was just the most amazing thing that had come out of this whole situation. Then she put me in contact with a cousin who is a very devout member of the LDS Church, who is a certified genealogist. And so she was able to even provide more information, because for a while there, it did take a bit of digging to figure out which one of the four brothers in my grandfather's family, who was my match out of that. That was the only kind of lingering question that was resolved pretty quickly. And so since, you know, discovering this family, they have an amazing history. They're also incredible people, many of them. They're all interesting. There are dozens and dozens of artists within the family. I'm a trained art conservator, and I'd always wondered, you know, where did my interest in art come from? I work with my hands, and it turns out that this particular family, my ancestors, developed a number of very famous firearms, and we went to a museum. We saw a number of them, you know, and just looking at the craftsmanship, thinking about how, you know, these individuals, you know, just their inventive minds, their creativity, and their incredible hand skills, I felt like, wow, this is probably where that comes from.
Yeah.
And that was just revelatory, because I didn't really have any kind of connection with my biological grandmother's family like that. I don't have really anything in common with them. And then to, you know, get hooked up with this family that has, you know, such an amazing history of accomplishment and doing incredible things, and especially, you know, the creativity and the hand skills, that was just absolutely mind-blowing to me.
That is so interesting. It's so interesting to hear how people's interests and skills tie in. Did you feel like you had that connection with your raised family, like your biological parents and your twin?
I will say, so my parents are both academics. They were always very encouraging of, you know, they always encouraged our interests. I got a master's degree in art history, which at that time I had classmates whose parents were actively discouraging them from doing that. You know, anything I wanted to do, any interests that I had, they encouraged. We were not a terribly close family, but, you know, they were very, very good about, you know, letting myself and my twin brother basically do whatever we wanted. So that was really a bonus in an otherwise just kind of normal upbringing.
Once you connected with your newfound family, did you tell your parents and your twin?
Yeah, right after that point, I mean, I thought, wow, this is really going to blow them away. And I was really surprised when that did not happen. I called my parents and I said, okay, this is what I found. And, you know, do you want to know? And of course they wanted to know. And I laid out the whole story for them. And I was surprised on a number of levels, but, you know, primarily I was really shocked by how, I don't know, matter of fact or nonchalant my father was about the whole thing. He's a total gun nut. And I thought, okay, well, maybe that'll be a hook, you know, that we are related to this family of, you know, famous gunsmiths. And he was just oddly uninterested. That was very disappointing in a huge way to me. I couldn't quite understand it, you know, given the excitement that surrounded, you know, finding my biological grandmother. I do think that a large part of it was due to the fact that, you know, my mother immediately, she had always held a very dim view of my biological grandfather. I mean, she didn't know anything about him, but I think that she was always, she always viewed my grandmother as a victim, which she definitely was not. And I think that kind of colored my father's opinion of his biological father.
Because they had some sort of relationship. The understanding is that it was consensual.
Exactly. And I ended up with some of my grandmother's scrapbooks from World War II. And there are references to this guy, to my grandfather in there. My aunt assured me, you know, that she thought very, you know, she was very fond of him. You know, it wasn't one of these horrible situations that you do hear about occasionally where, you know, it was not that situation for certain people.
Did he know about the pregnancy?
That we do not know, because she was very shortly thereafter, she was sent back to the United States and actually ended up in Arizona, as far away from her family as possible, where, you know, I don't know exactly where she was, but I'm assuming it was one of these, you know, homes where, you know, pregnant mothers would go, you know, place in until they had the baby and they put the baby up for adoption. So I don't think he had a clue at all. And in fact, I did end up becoming very well acquainted with my only first cousin on my biological grandfather's side. Not only did I get her perspective on who this guy was, what type of a person he was, there were numerous other people in the family who knew him quite well. And he was actually a really good guy. And, you know, my mother would just have basically none of it. I mean, he was sort of, you know, she just thought that he was some sort of cad, and that was that. And so there was some interest, you know, here and there from my father, you know, learning about the history, especially with regards to the guns, but just nothing, you know. I wanted to get out there. I wanted to meet all these people. They were far more welcoming than anybody on my biological grandmother's side, aside from my grandmother and my oldest aunt. They were all very receptive, including the super religious LDS people, which just completely blew me away, because you don't think of a person who's a member of a church with such a conservative reputation to be, you know, welcoming in these situations, but they were just oddly unfazed. And they've all been great. And I think that family supersedes everything else in the LDS church. It's really been a fantastic experience for me. And I feel I'm still just kind of puzzled how they never embraced it like I did.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I mean, since 2018, I've had this kind of separate relationship with a number of people on this side of the family. In fact, when I was still in contact with my parents, and, you know, I'd gone out to Utah with cousin Thana because she had never been there. She was completely, this family, she knew about the history, but she had never visited Utah, and she kind of wanted to, you know, she felt like she was learning along with me. And so we had met up in Utah. We've developed a fabulous relationship. There are other cousins that, you know, I visited. I've introduced my partner to them. It's just really been this great thing that has been completely outside of the sphere of my immediate family, which is really unfortunate.
So they just kind of, you told them the information, they received it, and then did they tell you we don't have an interest in getting to know these people, or you just kind of embarked on your own? How did you get to that place?
They never really, they never said, you know, outright that they were not interested, but this discovery coincided with a number of very unfortunate medical events with both my parents. And I think that they were both completely overwhelmed, you know, extensive illnesses. And I think, you know, at this stage in their lives, it just didn't hold any interest. They had bigger things to worry about.
What about your twin?
He was more interested, but not to the extent that I was. Mm. So it was kind of like, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, I was developing a relationship with a lot of people in the family, and they were completely on the outside of it. You know, my father had a niece, and I had actually, you know, I contacted her. We developed, you know, a very interesting relationship. It was not very long because she very sadly died within a matter of months of my meeting her. But I don't think it just registered with him that these were, you know, family that, you know, he could reach out to or, you know, what have you, and have a relationship. So I was kind of, you know, living this other life. And ultimately in the fall of 2018, I decided, well, I'm going to change my name, which is a real radical step for a lot of people. And I've heard some situations where, you know, people who have found their, you know, biological families have done that. And I didn't really think anything of it. I never liked my original last name. Very hard to pronounce at the end of the alphabet. And, you know, I did not grow up with anybody on my father's adopted father's side. I mean, we did not know anybody. I had never met anybody in that family. There was no connection. I think had I come from, you know, a large extended family of cousins and aunts and uncles, I would have probably not done that. But since there was absolutely no connection, and, you know, I'm not biologically related to those people, I just decided I was going to change my name. And I didn't really think about the ramifications of that because, you know, I didn't think it was really any big deal. It turned out to be a gigantic deal. I had initially told my mother's siblings, just kind of matter of fact, and my uncle was very supportive, and my aunt said, well, you know, professionally for you, it may be confusing, you know, to your colleagues and all this kind of stuff. And I think it was her way of, you know, trying to get me to, you know, maybe think about that this could, you know, go wrong. My mother had a very contentious relationship with her family that had, you know, kind of mended itself over time. And so my mother's siblings were hell-bent on placating her at every turn, you know, not rocking the boat. I ended up calling my father and I said, well, I just want to tell you that, you know, I'm changing my name. You know, it's nothing against you. I explained the situation and, you know, he's always been fairly laid back. And I didn't think, like I said, I didn't really think that it would have caused a huge uproar. Well, then my mother called and it really blew up into this gigantic fight that I was completely not anticipating.
What were their main concerns?
They felt that it was disrespectful. They thought that it was, you know, disrespectful to my father's adoptive parents. It was, and this is mostly my mother's opinion, that it was disrespectful to him. And, you know, I had explained to them, I said, you know, listen, I'm not related to those people. I'm grateful for what they did. They provided my father with a great life, a great education. They were very supportive. But, you know, for me, there was really nothing there because there was no family there. And I said, you know, I didn't tell them that I probably would have made a different decision had my life growing up been different had this family been present? And it ultimately, and my brother was furious about it, and it ultimately led to, you know, us being estranged for the past 4 years.
So you're still estranged now?
I'm still estranged from them. And, you know, I've asked my mother's siblings, I said, do you think I should do anything to pursue this? And they said, no. They said, just let it go. They said, you've done what you can do. I felt that, you know, I was not a very problematic child. I did all the things that I was supposed to do growing up. You know, I have a great career, lots of education under my belt that I thought, you know, that those that would really make any parent happy. And, you know, I'm just a normal, responsible citizen. And I thought that they would have been happy with that. And there's also, you know, the issue that, you know, I basically gave my father a family when I found his biological mother. And I thought that given that I had done that and the effort that I went through to make that happen, that would have, you know, he would have cut me some slack with this, that it wouldn't be an issue. But I feel like, you know, just contrasting the relationship that I have with my biological grandfather's side as opposed to my biological grandmother's side, it's just completely different.
You kind of felt like you supported your family through their connection with this family that you didn't necessarily connect to. I'm assuming it was hurtful that they weren't supportive of that relationship.
It was very, very hurtful because it was the exact, you know, from the rest of my family, both sides, my friends at work, it just was not an issue. And also, you know, I did not feel a connection with the biological grandmother's family. It was completely, it's been completely different with the biological, my biological grandfather's side.
What did they think of you changing your name?
They were all very supportive. I mean, nobody said anything. It just was not a huge, it was kind of a not a big deal. I think a number of them do know that things are obviously not very good with my parents, but it's very unfortunate.
How do you feel now that you have your biological family's last name?
I feel really great. You know, it's a very unique situation just because of all the history and the fact that the family is still a huge or a large presence in Utah, especially the city where they lived. You know, when I go back, I've gone back with Cousin Thanet a couple of times. It's so remarkable to be immersed in this history. You know, it's remarkable that I can go back to a city where my family has lived continuously since 1852. Their homes are still there. Their businesses are still there. It's just such a feeling of belonging to something, you know, being part of something. And it's right there. With my other side of the family, you know, I did explore and I did go back to, you know, certain hometowns and everything, but there really wasn't a presence there, an illustration of your family and its history. And Utah is just it's completely different on my grandfather's side of the family. It's a real sense of belonging and having this history and, you know, people that you are related to.
How would you say that being the child of an adoptee affected your sense of self and identity growing up?
There was always this something missing, you know, not having, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody had these large extended families. They knew both sides of them. You know, I felt like something was always missing. And I think the lack of having relatives nearby had an impact on my childhood. I think ultimately it seemed like at times, you know, I wanted to reveal, you know, who these people were more than the adoptee, which I thought was rather strange.
Yeah, it's an interesting space to be in because it's still your history too. Whereas if it was a friend, perhaps you might say, let them do what they want to do, but this is also part of your story. Have you had any contact with your family since this blow up?
Absolutely none. None at all. It's obviously, it is sad. You know, we weren't a particularly close family, so I think in some regards, it's nice to be away from the uncomfortableness and the drama, because there was, you know, drama at certain points growing up. It is kind of nice not to have to deal with a lot of that, but it is very sad. But I think, you know, with me, everybody's had numerous disappointments in their lives. I've just always just kind of carried on and just sort of moved ahead. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people deal with it, you know, therapy, drugs, There are a lot of things that you have no control over, and you can't control people's emotions, and you just have to accept it and you have to move on. If they were to reach out, that would be, I certainly wouldn't push them away. Without that acknowledgement of, what I've done for them, and at least some thanks, that would go a long way, but that hasn't materialized yet.
What's next for you in terms of connection with your newfound family? Are you going to meet any more family members, any more trips in the future?
Well, yeah, there will definitely be, we are already thinking of a few trips. We actually want to go back to England, which is where one of our ancestors is from, and my cousin is just dying to go. So we may do that. And of course, I've been going back to Utah a couple times a year. And then, of course, I have some relatives who are in Australia, and I'm dying to go see them. It's really amazing that how many people have kind of come out of the woodwork, not just through the DNA testing, but a few cousins have found me through social media. These are people that I would be friends with or want to know, even if I weren't related to them. I mean, it's just, it's the good fortune also of, they all kind of fit the same kind of demographic. I mean, we all have similar interests. Many of us, we're politically like-minded, which definitely helps. Mm-hmm. Not particularly religious. I mean, it's just been in many instances, it's been a perfect fit. Now, there are some people who I have corresponded with that, they're kind of interested in, chit-chat back and forth. A number of them have friended me on Facebook. Not everybody is, jumping out and saying, oh, hey, I mean, they all have their own families.
Right. You seem like you have done such an amazing job of immersing yourself in the family history and learning a lot and finding connection. And I think it can be challenging trying to figure out how do I connect with my culture, my background, all of those things. So what are some of the things that you've done really to feel that connection aside from your name change?
Well, I am very interested in sort of local history. So, there are a number of, groups that I've kind of joined on social media. I'm very, very interested in, historic preservation. And there are a number of instances in the city in Utah where there are other people who are really interested. And in fact, I went back to see the renovation of the building where my grandfather grew up. And that was very special. And the owner was able to get a bunch of information on the building and the family.
It's really interesting to think about building connection in ways that don't necessarily involve another person, but the buildings that, obviously your family is very prominent within. Yeah, the history, the gun making, the gunsmithing, like all of that side of it is still drawing you closer to the family. And so I think that's just fascinating.
And it is. And the reason why is because I see skills that I have, I think, can be tied directly to these people, who actually, I didn't even know that they existed until recently. So it's very odd. And I think there are a lot of people who find these families and they find either they look just like these people, which isn't the case in this family, or there are certain aspects about their current relatives and their ancestors that, really resonate with them. They can find concrete connections with. And that was just, that's been one of the most amazing things about this whole story, is that I feel like, wow, I have this in common with these people. It's just, it's undeniable. And to actually find that connection after not having had it is just amazing.
What questions do you still have about your whole story?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, how it turns out, especially, with my parents. I mean, it's kind of like a day by day thing. I am in a very good place right now with this whole situation. And I think, I just, not having had that connection, to this side of the family for the majority of my adult life, I just want to take advantage, continuing to, see relatives, continue to go out there and visit and, learn more about the family. I think in the past I would have said, oh, I'm so busy with work and I can't travel. And now I feel like, okay, I need to set aside time to meet up with relatives. I just feel like a real, now that I'm 51, I need to take advantage of, the time that I have left.
Yeah. This will be an interesting take, I think, again, because you're the child of an adoptee and your biological grandmother knew who the father was and didn't tell. So what advice do you have for a parent who is keeping a DNA surprise from their child?
Well, I think these days, you know, if I were to still have my grandmother around, I think I personally should have been more aggressive in the past because I feel like she held back information that prolonged the search. And I really regret that I didn't find this information out until I was, you know, approaching middle age. I think that, you know, if there is a lingering question that you have with, you know, a grandparent or a parent about the identity of the other parent, you should try to be more proactive and really, you know, pull out the stops. I think these days it's a lot easier. And I think now that most people are, they're cognizant of DNA technology, you really can't hide secrets. And I think I would, you know, if my grandmother were still alive and I was still pondering this question, I would say, well, if you don't tell me, then, you know, the DNA test is just going to blow the lid off of everything.
And what advice do you have for someone who is just embarking on this DNA surprise journey?
I think that anybody who's embarking on a DNA journey needs to really, they need to be prepared for disappointments. For a lot of the positives that have, you know, come out of my journey, there were, you know, a number of negatives, the most obvious of those being the estrangement. So you just need to mentally prepare yourself. And if you're a person who needs therapy or needs to be in a support group, you need to really think about those options before you dive into this, because I really did not, you know, I feel like I am handling it, you know, the best that I can. But for other people, I think it can be very challenging. And I think another thing that I would say is, you know, while I have met lots of lovely people, there are other people who, you know, they're mildly interested or they're not interested at all. I have one cousin that I connected with, and she actually reached out to me on social media. She was great. Everything was going well. She had welcomed me into her home in Utah. She's younger than me. She, you know, recently married. Very interesting person. And I don't know what happened, but I've sort of fallen out with her. And I don't quite understand why, because I do feel like with, you know, I've really been strategic when I've reached out to people, you know, not to push things too far, you know, or too quickly. You know, I mean, you kind of want to keep it at a comfort level, you know, where everybody's comfortable. But I've been very disappointed by that particular connection. And I think if, you know, and actually, there are a lot of people who, I mean, some of the stories that I've heard in your podcast of people who have been pushed away, or, you know, where the relatives or even, you know, the biological parent has said, no, I don't want any contact with you. I think in those situations, you just need to let it go. If somebody doesn't want to engage, if you run into, you know, a problem relative, I just don't think it's worth the energy to pursue it. And that's another potential disappointment that you need to be fully cognizant of, because it can either be kind of subtle, like this one particular situation that I've had, or it can be way more hurtful where, you know, the other party is telling you in no uncertain terms, I don't want to have a relationship. So I just think you need, I would hope that people who are doing this, you know, going through this journey, just really think about what can happen, and especially what can go wrong, and be prepared for that.
That's really good advice. Well, Morgan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I so appreciate you telling your story, and it's so fascinating to hear from the child of an adoptee and how it's affected you. So thank you for sharing that, and I wish you the best of luck as you continue to connect with your family and your roots.
Thank you, Alexis, and I really appreciate you for allowing me to share my story.
Thanks again to Morgan for sharing his story. If you have a DNA surprise story that you'd like to share, please email dnasurprises@gmail.com. Until next time.